we are creating a species-wide problem to make cesarean a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Let cesarean be a lifesaver, but not a lifestyle.
Yeah.
Because we need our physiology for social connection, for the vagal nerve connection, for the relationship with that baby. The idea of easier birth isn't only to bring pleasure or satisfaction. It is for the relationship of the generations to pass on the empowerment of physiology from one generation to the next.
You're listening to the Mommy Labor Nurse podcast, where you'll gain the tools, knowledge, and confidence you need to erase the unknowns, feel in control, and have an even better birth, no matter how you deliver. My name is Liesl Teen, mom of two, practicing labor and delivery nurse, and your host. From over 8 years and counting of working at the bedside, I know that knowledge is the key to an even better birth. So tune in each week to learn about all things pregnancy, birth, and postpartum from me, a labor and delivery nurse that's seen it all. And now let's get into this week's episode. Welcome back, guys, to the Mommy Labor Nurse podcast. This week, I told you guys last week that I was re-airing an episode this week, but guess what? I'm going to do it this week and next week because this episode is so cool that I did do two parts to it. So I figure why split up the parts when I could just, you know, upload them at the same time. So we're going to do part one this week, and then next week is going to be part two. This is actually the most popular podcast episode on the Mommy Labor Nurse podcast, and it's gotten, let me actually check. Let's go into my little dashboard and check and see how many downloads it's had, because it's had a lot. It's had over 25,000 downloads. Crazy, crazy, crazy. Just one episode. That's just one episode. So in this episode, you'll hear, I think I talk about me being pregnant, but I know I aired it when I had just announced I was pregnant with Ryland. So you can see how long ago this was, because he's 3.5 now. So I think at the episode, I refer to my pregnancy and just know that I am not currently pregnant, but I was at the time of the airing of this episode. There's a funny story that just popped into my head before I actually talk about what the episode is going to be about. Totally took a pregnancy test the other day because right now I have an IUD. I've had an IUD right after I had Ryland. I had two periods once I got, well, not right afterwards, but once I got my period back, I think I had two periods and they were so crazy heavy. So I went to my OB and I was like, please help me, please, please help me. And my OB was like, let's put an IUD in. I was like, game, let's do it. So I've had an IUD pretty much, you know, since Ryland was, I don't know, 8 or 9 months old. I think that's when I got my period back, and love that thing. It's done me a lot of good. It's just been sitting in there doing its job. And at first I had a ton of bleeding and I was not an IUD fan. And I was like, this is not going to be working for me, because it was a whole month straight. Not heavy, heavy bleeding, but just a period. Like it was annoying, but I was told that that is normal. And that is normal to have like frequent bleeding initially when you first get it placed, not actively bleeding, but just, you know, the IUD is kind of doing its job. It's removing, you know, part of that uterine layer. And that's what helps to keep you not pregnant. So it's doing its job. But I had a lot of bleeding initially when I got that IUD placed. But ever since then, ooh, my periods have just been great. And guess what? For the past few months, nothing, no periods, nada. It's been great. It kind of slowly tapered, you know, I would get a period and it would be like a couple days, a little bit of spotting, but then 1 month, I just didn't have anything. And you know, your first thought when you don't have anything is like, oh, S-H-I-T, am I pregnant? Is the IUD doing its job? So I don't know about you, but I'm one of those girls that I just take a pregnancy test every few months, just to make sure the IUD is doing its job. So I did that the other day and it's doing its job. We're good. Liesl's not pregnant, but yeah, when I was talking about being pregnant, it just made me think of the fact that I took a pregnancy test the other day and I hadn't taken one in a really long time. So yes. Anyways, this episode is super informative. I'm excited to put this out again for you guys because Gail is such a wealth of knowledge. If you don't know who she is and you don't know who Spinning Babies is, it's going to be linked in the episode description for you to go to, but such a crazy good resource. And honestly, such a fangirl of Spinning Babies. Like before I even started Mommy Labor Nurse, I remember finding Spinning Babies and being like, oh my God, this is such an amazing resource for pregnant moms and anybody who wants to give birth because they're so knowledgeable. Gail really talks about the physiology of your baby in there and the importance of creating as much space in that pelvis as possible. And in this episode, we do just that. We talk about ample fetal positioning and the fact that having a head down baby is just half of it. That's not the only thing we should be thinking about. It's really important to consider which way the baby is facing and how flexed the head is. So you'll hear Gail talk about it and she makes it really, really easy to understand. So we talk about ample fetal positioning and the importance of that regarding birth. She talks about some exercises and movements that you can do during your pregnancy to hopefully get baby in that ample position for birth. And we talk about breech babies and what to do if your provider says, oh, your baby's breech. Because I get a lot of DMs about, my provider told me my baby's breech. What do I do? How do I flip this baby? So we talk a lot about that. And we talk about posterior babies. That's a common position that especially first-time moms find that they have posterior babies, particularly at the beginning of labor. And then we also talk about something called asyncliticism. That's a big word, but it basically means a baby that's not so ample in there. Their head is kind of wedged off a little bit to the side. So Gail talks about that and kind of what to do if your baby is suspected to have asyncliticism. So I hope you enjoy part one. Like I said, part two will be out next week. But for now, let's get into this week's episode with Gail. Hi, Gail. Welcome to the Mommy Labor Nurse Podcast. Thank you so much for being here today.
Hi, Lisa. I'm so happy to be with you today.
Yeah.
I hear such great things about your program.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, of course, I am like a huge fangirl of you guys. Like you guys are all throughout my courses and all throughout my posts. Like I refer people to you guys all the time because gosh, you are just such a wealth of information for like pregnant moms. And I just want to have posters up everywhere in every hospital room and just everybody needs to know about spinning babies. So I'm a big fan. So I appreciate you coming on here and talking to me. So can you, Gail, just start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself and your family and where you're from, what you do and all that good stuff?
Oh, great. Well, that's a very broad invitation. I'm a midwife from the Midwest in the USA and Minnesota. And had a small home birth practice here for several years, many years, and had a question. I had a question, what would make birth easier?
Yeah.
And I had myself two easy births. I was a teen mom for my first one with a midwife in the hospital and had my second one at home at 30. So quite a gap in age. And I caught my second one before he hit the floor because he was really that, not that fast, but when he did decide to come, he came fast and had to grab them. But I helped people who were wanting to have a natural birth or what we call a natural birth, a physiological birth, we call it today.
Yeah.
And sitting with women who had the same motivation, the same intention, and often the same preparation, I noticed that some births were easy and some births did take long time. Mm-hmm. And I started to ask why. And the common reason that maybe another midwife gave would be, oh, the person has, they're uptight. They have issues of letting go. Mm-hmm. As I sit with these families, I'm not feeling that this birthing person has got any difference in their letting go than the next person. Mm-hmm. Sometimes those are the issues, but very much the minority compared to something else that was going on. So, you know, I wanted to serve better. And so I started to say, what would make birth easier? Mm-hmm. And that led to spinning babies.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. No, you brought up that it is, there's probably something else going on that when people are saying you're just tense, and that totally makes sense because I think that does play into some people's labors where you just, you're too tense. But yeah, there's so much more that goes into it.
And, you know, in our world today, in modern life, we have a lot of things to be tense about.
Yeah.
It is tension.
I got tension in my shoulders right now.
Yeah. Let's a little shoulder roll, a little, oh, yes. Yeah, so it's all of us listening and the two of us.
Yeah.
A little relaxing.
My shoulder relaxing. Yeah. 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 No, totally. Well, that kind of, I guess, answers our first question that we were going to do, guys. And I've just kind of, I made all of these questions. I've taken just things that I actually went to a spinning babies workshop. I think it was 2 months ago. No, more than 2 months ago. It was last year sometime. So I've taken just stuff from that and questions that I could think of and just kind of scoured your website and everything. So we have 10 questions. We're just going to kind of go through these and talk about these. You can elaborate a little bit more on this. So I really wanted to know how you kind of started spinning babies.
Yeah, thank you for asking that question. Spinning babies arose out of a question, how can birth be easier? Mm-hmm. And why are some women's births easier than others when they share the same intent and same preparation, the same motivation? So I left the idea that it was mental tension or an attitude or they were wanting to be in control. And I started to sit in a very physiological way with women. So as a midwife or doula sits with someone from early labor into their active labor, into their transition and pushing stage, I always like to just relax my body and ask the question, if my body was doing what their body is doing, what would be happening now? Mm-hmm. And it helped me become aware of tension or relaxation, what they call in brain science, mirror neurons. Mm-hmm. And we can perceive what's happening in the room with us, with other people. And as my attention is on the birth giver, I'm really feeling, where do I feel movement? Where do I feel stiffness? Where do I feel slow? Where do I feel something stop? Mm-hmm. And give a very gentle observation to the birth giver. I observed that earlier there was movement and relaxation in your lower back, and that now it feels tense, and it feels like as you let your labor come through, it stops right there. Mm-hmm. And that you actually are pulling upward instead of releasing downward. Mm-hmm. And that would help the birth giver have awareness of what they were doing and make a physiological decision to relax into the labor, to trust the process, to maybe alternatively address why they were pulling back. Was it fear of pain, fear of tearing, sense of doubt? Was it tension in the muscle? Birth position that was chosen that actually closes down the pelvis in the exact spot that the baby's waiting. Mm-hmm. This happens much more often than we think because our birth providers go to something that works commonly but doesn't work always. And so there wasn't a curiosity of what's the best birth position at the best time.
Mm, just what works for them, right?
Well, not so much for them, but let's say, why do women lay on their back and pull their legs apart to push a baby up? If we go back to the heyday of hospital maternity care in the 40s and 50s, there were strong medications that women couldn't be walking around on, the twilight sleep, or for instance, where women were out of their minds so that they couldn't remember birth, but they could feel birth. That was the drug of the era. And it was very dangerous for women to walk around because one woman went out the window. And so they started tying women down, and they had to have a reason why they did that. So they said it was to be hygienic so that the woman herself wouldn't touch anything. Mm. What does that mean? Her own body or her own baby. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't the real reason. It wasn't hygiene. It was because the drugs they gave had terrible side effects of the woman could wander off and not realize what she was doing.
Yeah.
And so we have a reason why birth care is set up the way it is, but we don't always have the knowledge why. So laying on our back with our legs apart was because, you know, the system had women on their backs that gave the view to the doctor to do maneuvers if the baby got stuck or if the doctor wanted to cut or do instrument. And the legs apart, if the pushing wasn't happening, the theory was, okay, legs apart makes more room. But legs apart makes more room in one place in the pelvis, not everywhere in the pelvis. Mm-hmm. And if the baby is high in the pelvis, legs apart makes more room high in the pelvis. It makes less room low in the pelvis. But if the baby's already low, their head will mold to the smaller opening that is created by holding knees open and apart. But if the baby is high, the baby won't be able to get into the pelvis. So if the baby is low, the baby can squeeze. But if the baby's high, the baby just doesn't come in because it's like the door's in the way.
Yeah.
And so to speak, if you think of the pubic bone as a little bit of a door, we can open it wider with knees apart, back flat. You hear sometimes the nurses say, well, this is an inverted beetle. In other words, you're flat on your back with your legs in the air.
Yeah.
If we understand that the reason that was chosen was because the woman herself, the birth giver themselves, were not able to participate in their own childbirth, the staff with limited knowledge had to come up with something.
Right.
Today, we're empowering women to be vertical, to be on hands and knees, to be on a birth stool, to be whatever position that person wants to be in position so they can respond to their own body. And we have to empower the providers to understand physiology.
Right. And that it's not a one size fits all kind of situation.
Exactly. And talking about one size fits all, if somebody is saying this baby's too big, well, quit closing the door on the baby. Hello? Let's change the leg position and open up the pelvis where the baby's coming through. Help the baby turn, which is why we call it spinning babies, is because babies themselves want to turn into the space in the pelvis where there's the most room. The baby turns to where the space is so they can drop down. They turn, they drop down, they turn again, they drop down farther. They mold their head into the space available, but we can make more space available in two ways. We're talking about making room in the bony pelvis right now, but there's another way to make room for the baby. So the baby's in an ideal position, and that's the soft tissue pelvis or the muscles, fascia, and ligaments that are in the uterus and in the pelvic floor and leading up to the pelvis so that the pelvis is more supple and the pelvic floor becomes a guide for the baby, not a floor to try to struggle through.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get the visual that you're trying to make. Totally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because the pelvis is beautifully designed to help the baby rotate. First of all, it's designed to keep the baby in.
Right.
All the muscles and ligaments want to keep the baby in until the baby's ripe.
Right.
Baby sends a signal, everything ripens and softens. Then ideally, the birth giver's body that's balanced then responds to the hormones. There's a hormone communication between the baby and the brain of the birth giver, and the baby starts to turn into position. Contractions want to turn the baby into position before they want to open the cervix.
Right.
Opening the cervix is going to happen when the baby's head is well applied to it.
Right.
As long as we haven't scarred it up with procedures of cutting and burning. So the body is beautifully designed to bring the baby into the pelvis by turning and tucking the baby's chin, guiding the baby down. And when the muscles are supple, this can be a strong, empowering experience for the birth giver. Mm-hmm. And for a very few people, it's even pleasurable. It's even to the point of pleasure.
Oh, yeah. That's something that I refer to in my courses, too, that there's a thing called orgasmic birth.
Sure.
I think Ina May Gaskin talked about that in her book.
Deborah Pascali Bonaro is the creator of orgasmic birth. Uh-huh. And it is really a wonderful approach. It's not just about the sexual pleasure of orgasm.
Yeah.
But the peak experience of giving birth is the climax of gestation, of labor, and it's the release.
Oh, it's that makes sense. Well, hey, then I feel like I had an orgasmic birth because when I gave birth, I felt that high. I felt that, you know, and I didn't have an epidural or anything. I gave birth, and it's, you go from such a degree of pain, and then pure bliss and joy because you're done and you're not hurting anymore and your baby's right there. So that's interesting that you bring that. Yeah, that's interesting that you bring that up, that she says it in that way too.
Yeah, because, you know, we could talk about ecstatic, pleasure, empowering, but she found out that she really got attention when she talked about orgasmic birth.
Yeah.
And it is a new perspective that our bodies could bring us pleasure, and the empowerment of physiological birth and a birth without medication is transformative to our brains. Mm-hmm. And when we transform our brains and our bodies, we parent differently. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we have the most interventive birth, we can be good parents. We can be
of course. Parents. Yeah.
But when we have that physiological advantage, things are happening inside our actual brain structures that we can't get to any other way besides labor.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And yeah. So we need the technology to be a lifesaver, but we are creating a species-wide problem to make cesarean a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Let cesarean be a lifesaver, but not a lifestyle. Yeah. Because we need our physiology for social connection, for the vagal nerve connection, for the relationship with that baby. The idea of easier birth isn't only to bring pleasure or satisfaction. It is for the relationship of the generations to pass on the empowerment of physiology from one generation to the next so we can be the best that we have available to us.
Yeah.
There are exceptions where the cesarean is the best. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But overall, as a species, it's not a solution to bring us along evolution. We're going to lose it.
Right.
We need to have our bodies. We're not just brains.
That's so interesting. I feel like I'm about to I feel so relaxed from your voice, learning all this stuff. That's so cool.
Are you interested in the possibility of an unmedicated birth? Make sure you grab my totally free natural birth prep pack. It's full of free printable resources to help you start preparing for your even better birth. Inside the pack, you'll get access to our super popular hospital bag checklist so that you know your hospital bag is stocked with everything you need for the big day. You'll also get our traditional and visual birth plan templates to help you think through all the questions related to your birth and gain the sense of control you deserve. You'll get exclusive MLN birth affirmation cards, one of my favorite ways to tap into that mental strength during natural birth. And finally, you'll get a third trimester to-do list to feel completely at ease heading into labor, knowing you've checked every box. To grab all of this for free, simply head on over to mommylabornurse.com/naturalpack. That's mommylabornurse.com/naturalpack to access your free natural birth prep pack today.
So let's move into the second question. And I feel like you've already kind of talked about this, but you can elaborate on this, you know, even more if you want to. So when I went to this workshop, ample fetal positioning, which we've already talked about specifically, and you guys talk about that head down is not enough. I know that was something that they really talked about in the workshop, that just because baby's head down.
Who was your trainer? You know, remember who your trainer was?
Who was my trainer? Now I'm going to be embarrassed because I can't remember who it was.
What city were you in?
Pinehurst, North Carolina.
It was either Tammy Ryan, Rhea Williams, Lorenza Holt.
It was Tammy.
Tammy Ryan. Mm-hmm. Tammy Ryan's an approved trainer for spinning babies.
Yes.
And by the way, for the listeners, the approved trainers have had long time interactions with me and training in the paradigm. It's much more than the techniques. It's the, we are trying to change the paradigm.
Yeah.
So we have thought in the topic that you say, ample fetal positioning. Well, I would say ideal fetal positioning, Jean Sutton was the midwife that coined the term optimal fetal positioning with her, okay, with her childbirth educator, Pauline Scott.
Yeah.
And in their book, Optimal Fetal Positioning, you know, what's optimal is the position the baby can come through the pelvis without injury or exhaustion and fit out the pelvis. So for some women, their pelvis is such that whatever the baby's position, head position is, they're coming through, they're going to fit. And that's ideal, mm-hmm, especially if the hormones are intact and the baby can come right back into the arms, skin to skin contact, right? So right, start that brain heart connection.
Right.
So fetal positioning means that the baby's come through with their head tipped this way or that, their chin could be up or their chin could be down. Mm-hmm. Now, if your listeners would put their hands on their crown, like make a little circle, like a halo, and tuck your chin and drop that over the crown of your head, like a little
right now,
like a little cap.
Yeah.
And you feel the roundness of that, yeah, part of your head. And that's where the baby's head molds.
Right.
And so you can get the smallest size head through the pelvis when the chin is tucked. But now lift up your chin, lift your hand up and drop your head flat, drop your hand, your circle,
yeah,
two hands right on the top of your head. Uh-huh. And you see, if you make a circle, like make a circle with your index fingers and your thumb.
I have like headphones on, so it's a little harder to do.
And now you notice that your head extends forward and back, and
yeah,
there's a gap side to side. It's not symmetrical. The head's not well applied in the pelvis. Now push your head into your circle. Uh-oh, your chin's already up, so you can't help if you tuck your chin and put it in. You can push the circle over. You can push it open. The baby is an active participant,
yeah,
when their chin is tucked, and the baby is a passive participant when their chin is up and the mother has to do more work.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is fetal positioning. Let's have the baby in the smallest diameters to fit the pelvis. Mm-hmm. The baby in the most active position so they can help out. So it's not a one-way dance.
Mm-hmm.
The two dancing together.
Mm-hmm.
That creates room. Now, if we have tight muscles, let's say we had a fall, we had a little fender bender, we had a twist, we do activities that twist our bodies over and over again, like a tennis player mm-hmm, playing golf or sports or... Okay, or we're a nurse or a chiropractor who turns to work on the patient or to lift a patient, things like that. I had a friend that was a farmer who threw hay bales. So mm-hmm, one side of the body was kind of twisted towards the other because that movement keeps twisting the uterus when it happens all of a sudden, like a fall in a big way,
mm-hmm,
or when it happens over and over again through our occupations. So we want to untwist and we want to release tension. And for those people who've had many babies and that there's no tension whatsoever,
right,
want to support with a belly band or a pregnancy belt,
mm-hmm,
whatever fits for that person. Everybody's body is a little different. So different brands fit different people. I can't, yeah, make a recommendation, but traditionally there would be a very thin cloth wrapped a couple times around the belly and tucked in the side or tied in the back, mm-hmm, that would not just be around the front of the belly, but underneath to give it a little bit of a lift.
Mm-hmm.
Because the angle of the slope of the lower part of the pregnant belly,
mm-hmm,
aims the baby into the pelvis. We want the uterus and the pelvis to be lined up together so the uterine contractions can send the baby down.
Gotcha.
So if something is too tight, like the right side of the pelvic floor or the back muscles, because we sit a lot, so the back is weak.
Right.
It's not only weak, it's stiff. And abdominal muscles that are so tight from core exercises that the baby can't turn head down because there's no room to turn. It's all so tight, they can't wiggle around so much.
Yeah.
It could be many things that we do either by cultural conditioning or values like exercise. We try to do exercises that are based on a flat abdomen,
mm-hmm,
but our design is for curved abdomen, mm-hmm, and a supple psoas. So anyway, I could go on about that. But the point being is the baby fits the space available in the muscles and ligaments, and whether they're short or long, whether they're tight or supple. Gravity is pulling the baby's head into the best position they can be in, given the space available. So if their head is not tucked and in the smallest diameter, mm-hmm. it's because something's holding it otherwise.
Essentially, and your whole thing is if we can make kind of more space, then baby's likely to get in a little bit of a better optimal, ample, whatever you want to call it, positioning.
And that doesn't mean to be loose and sit around.
Right.
It's really about tone, not too tight, not too loose, and not mm-hmm. too twisty. Mm-hmm. So that the pelvic muscles, the iliacus and the psoas and the pelvic floor all make a funnel to put the crown of the head through the bony pelvis, the openings between the bones, so that the baby can mold and be in the smallest position. Yeah. And the baby kind of comes out with their shoulders all curled together and their head all tucked. And they come out like a little bit of a tube. And then they blossom into a baby shape again within hours. Yeah.
Their hands open. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, the next question is just, are there any exercises, movement tips that you recommend that we implement during pregnancy for hopefully an easier labor? So let's talk about like kind of stuff that we can maybe do.
Exercises, movements, and tips for pregnancy for an easier labor. Well, let's start with the most essential movement of all, which is breathing.
Yeah.
And having relaxed abdomen, you know, relaxing our rib cage. That means ditch the bra because it's constricting the rib cage. Halfway through the pregnancy, we're starting to have problems with our respiratory diaphragm or catching our breath because we're constricting. And that constriction's been going on a long time. If we want to make room in the pelvic floor for the baby to come through, we have to make room in the ceiling, which is the respiratory diaphragm. Hmm. We want
to get rid of your bra.
Yeah,
throw it in the trash.
And you know, and of course, some of us are amply.
Yeah.
So that's a little un.
But yeah, it's not going to happen as easily.
Yeah. So then you want a bra two sizes too big.
Okay.
Going to seem roomy at first, and then it's going to fill in as the ribs need some room.
Yeah.
The pelvic floor needs some room, but we've talked about Kegels, the tightening, you know, the tightening the muscles so you don't wet your pants. Mm-hmm. But what happens if people do that too much? And so the muscles are short and tight all the time. Mm-hmm. And so when you try to stop peeing, they're already short and you just can't stop peeing.
Right.
So the counteraction for that we have on our daily activities, doing a type of squatting with flat feet on the floor and grabbing something in front of us like a banister, a bedpost, another friend, mm-hmm. and sticking the bottom out the back and acting like you're going to sit down in a chair. You don't mm-hmm. go down very far. Chair distance is more ideal, mm-hmm. but you're tipping the bottom so that you could make a moon print on the wall behind you. If you sat in finger paint, and you wanted to make two round spots on the wall behind you,
yeah.
you flip your butt really extremely. Mm-hmm. Or if you thought about, you know, some of us have peed in the woods or we've
peed
in the alley after a concert when we were young or something. And you know how you have to flip your pelvis so you don't pee all over your shoes.
Yes.
It's called an anterior pelvic tilt. Mm-hmm. And when we squat with a bit of an anterior pelvic tilt, we're lengthening the pelvic floor muscles, which makes long pelvic floor muscles make the pelvic floor more supple, more responsive, better circulation, better function, and more comfort in birth, more comfort in sex, more comfort in movement.
Yeah.
More flow to our legs, less pressure differences between our legs and our torso. Mm-hmm. Better circulation to our feet. We want to think about our bodies and our joints as needing movement in directions that we don't often move. We often sit, we often walk, we might do activities that are just forward and back, like bicycling, running, walking, all the same kinds of movements of the joints. So we want to slowly and gently move our joints in other directions, bringing a leg out in a side lunge or doing a front lunge and lengthening the psoas on the leg that's in the back. Mm-hmm. So we have a free list on our website, spinningbabies.com, where there are instructions on some activities that parents can do to help full range of motion, mm-hmm. long, supple muscles. Mm-hmm. We recommend prenatally prepared yoga. Mm-hmm. In other words, not the real core strength for pregnancy. Mm-hmm. I know some of the listeners are really into that, but I would say add or focus on using props and perfect alignment or good alignment to make long muscles. And we have some activities that we call body balancing. Many of them were inspired by Dr. Carol Phillips, who has dynamicbodybalancing.com. And she's another Minnesotan where I live, who I learned from years ago, and she's taught our trainers and we promote her work. And there are some slow stretch techniques that parents can learn to do together. That it takes two people. So you need a doula, a partner, a mature friend that can follow the directions.
Yeah.
And this is going to help there be more flexibility in the joints, longer muscles. You could do them a couple times a week. You could do them every day. You can do them in labor. And we spell them out. But we also show them in action on our Spinning Babies Parent class video. It's a download. Mm-hmm. Really empowering if you have a person that works with you in pregnancy, such as a partner or a family member or a friend. You can really do these things regularly together. It makes a huge difference for most people. I'm going for 80% of the pregnant people can just use the self-care activities that we give away freely to have an easier birth with less pain and shorter time. And I really believe that. And for the other 20%, they might need a professional body worker, such as osteopath, chiropractor, a fascia therapist. They really need to know about pregnancy.
Yeah.
So walking is a great activity, but walking with a flow. So you're pushing off with your back foot and you're using your thigh muscle to swing your leg forward in a nice stride. And, you know, start slow and move up to it. Have good shoes and be safe. Right. Now we have ice where I live, so people go to the shopping malls to do the walking where it's safe. Be careful about falling.
Yeah, no, we don't want to fall when we're pregnant.
We have an exercise that we learned from Dr. Carol Phillips called forward leaning inversion.
Yeah.
And it helps cervical ligaments to be more balanced so the uterus doesn't have a twist in it. We live in gravity. And we falls and bumps and things like fender benders or hitting the curb with a bike when we're kids, that can leave our uterus in a bit of a twist, even for decades. Yeah. But the forward leaning version done one time a day for just seconds, like 30 seconds, helps untwist those ligaments. It's coming up that is the techniques. Hanging upside down is the preparation. It's coming back up to kneeling that is the correction. And there's some warnings and some contraindications, like don't do this with hypertension.
Of course. Yeah, yeah.
But look on the website. We have parent educators, certified parent educators. Their parents can take a 3-hour class from them to learn some of our basic techniques. And we have body workers who have taken a 4-day training from us to learn techniques that we think are crucial for fetal positioning. They're already body workers when they come. And then they get what really seems to help fetal positioning. There's some things out in the internet that can help, but there's also some misunderstandings. So we really go into it. Also, people look for chiropractors who do the Webster maneuver, which is
right.
Very fine maneuver and helps a lot of people.
Yeah, we talk about that. That's so popular in my Facebook group that I have that's linked to my course, that people talk about, hey, I went to a chiropractor, but make sure you go to a chiropractor that knows what the Webster technique is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's one of the techniques. And then there's the symphysis pubis correction that's very helpful for people who feel like they're going overdue.
Yeah.
The idea of body balance brings the body into function so that your body acts in nature. Your baby grows nice, you get to full term, you start labor spontaneously, you're able to finish labor spontaneously, and then to greet your baby in arms, skin to skin, for that very important heart-brain connection, face-brain looking connection that they call the vagal nerve complex.
Yeah.
That social greeting that sets who we are as humans, you know, so much. What are our social actions as humans? Well, our physiology enhances that. it's not the end all be all, but it's really the basics. It's like, if you thought about what's a good diet, well, everybody needs water.
Right.
And social connection is the very basics.
Oh yeah. It's a basic need. And I mean, I think that the only thing I was going to say about that was that obviously there are some people who have births where baby's not stable. You can't do that, you know, initially or whatever, you're not stable, but we still, I hear time and time and again that people say, I wanted that so badly. You know, you like yearn for that. And that's just evidence of how important it is.
And we can recreate it. I remember his beautiful family, very well educated, very loving, older couple. I mean, as far as giving birth goes. And for good reason, she had her baby by cesarean.
Yeah.
And months later, we were all at a party at her house, in her husband's house, celebrating their parenting. And maybe it was a first birthday. I don't think it was a first birthday. I think the baby was still little enough not to be crawling, I think. But anyway, we were there at her home, and just by chance, she was sitting in a chair breastfeeding, and I was kneeling down beside her chair with a little conversation, and her husband was there. The three of us were talking at this party, and she said, I just really miss that I couldn't lift my baby to my arms and have that first hour. And I said, let's do it now.
Yeah.
And I turned the lamp down that was next to the chair.
Oh, I got chills.
I brought the little lap blanket that was on her couch over, and I just gently took her baby symbolically under the blanket.
Yeah.
And I said, here comes the baby's head. Feel the stretch. Just reach down and bring your baby up to your heart. Mm-hmm. And we just spontaneously reenacted that moment. And she lifted her baby up to her breasts, and she just wept in relief. You know, it's like, I have my moment back.
Oh, that is so great. And I've never even thought to encourage somebody to do that too. But how simple is that? You know, if you really missed out on that experience, or maybe you had a vaginal delivery, but it was traumatic, or you didn't get to experience, you know, that baby initially just right on your chest.
Warm, wet weight. And it's so nice to do it without drying the baby off, if possible, because that is an imprint on, I know for myself, it's an imprint that lasts my life. It's my children are 30 and 42. You know, I feel their bodies on my chest to this day.
Oh, I remember that feeling. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. That is such a good tip. That is such a good tip.
Our physiology has no time.
Yeah.
And it is amazing that we can go back in the past and heal the past with our physiology.
Yeah. Well, we need to start telling birth trauma people who you see a therapist, if you have birth trauma or something afterwards, we need to start telling people that tip. Like, hey, maybe try this. Let's reenact things. That.
Try it with the tapping. Try it with the quantum neurological reset.
Right.
Eye movement therapy. Because these are ways of crossing the brain hemispheres, reenacting, you know, what we wake up the synapses for that memory. They start dumping chemicals into our body that can make our heart rate increase, our breathing increase, the fear response or the anger, the grief. That happens. There's no time to it. It's just happening again. And when we do the tapping or the eye movement therapy or quantum neurological reset or whatever is the next one that has touch, it has sound, it has light, it has moving the eyes, those are important because all of those senses are activated in the synapse passage of that memory, and we heal that memory. And now the next time we have that trigger, we can still remember it, but it doesn't start dumping stress chemicals into our body anymore.
Right.
That reduces down to a point where it's like, oh, I remember that. In fact, you can turn it into an empowering memory where love is released instead. Yeah. And that is absolutely possible.
Yeah. Wow. I want to go home and get my 3-year-old all wet and reenact him and like it, take off my shirt and like get him in his diaper and do that.
Yeah.
That sounds so great.
and enact the senses. Have the lights the way you would have wanted. The
sound,
the music. Use your eyes back and forth. And when you have that memory, you know, there's professionals that can really take someone who's had a lot of trauma. Phyllis Klaus is a great advisor of spinning babies. Uh-huh. She's a therapist that deals a lot with birth trauma with parents and birth trauma for providers.
Yeah.
Who also can get very...
Oh, absolutely.
...experiences in their careers. And we have that transformation inside us. It's just, we are just now learning how to use the brain to heal the brain, you know, the healing's within us.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, the sound of that heartbeat means it's time for this week's segment of Birth It Up Babies. That's right. This one says, I took your epidural course with a due date of 10/19. Baby came fast on 10/14. I had no labor symptoms, and at midnight, I woke up to a horrible cramp and lost my mucus plug. Contractions were already 1.5 to 2 minutes apart, lasting at least 45 seconds long. Ooh, they sure did come on fast, didn't they? We went to the hospital, and by the time I got into labor and delivery, I had no time for an epidural. Oh no! Ah, she was born by 4:17 a.m. Oh my gosh. So she's, okay, let me just do math. At midnight, okay, she lost her mucus plug at midnight. Oh my gosh, and she had her baby at 4. That is, wow. Wow. And I think this is her first baby. Oh my gosh. All this to say, even though I took your epidural course, I feel like I had the tools necessary to deliver my baby naturally. Thank you for such a well thought out course to prepare me to welcome my sweet baby girl into the world. Oh, I love it. And see, this is exactly why I do this, and this is exactly why I put these out here, because this kind of stuff happens. If you're having your first baby, you cannot bet on the fact that it's going to be this long, drawn-out labor, and you can count on your epidural, because sometimes it happens like this. You'd be surprised that this happens all the time. So that's why I stand by the epidural course. I'm still going to teach you about some pain control techniques, because guess what? You probably going to have some pain before. If you do end up getting your epidural, there's probably going to be some painful contractions that you have to deal with. So I want you to be prepared with pain control techniques to deal with those pre-epidural. But yeah, birth is unpredictable. We don't know. We don't know how it's going to go. I wish I had a little crystal ball and I could just say, you over there, yes, this is how your labor is going to go, and you, this is how this is going to go. But until they make one of those, yeah, it's a crapshoot, right? So this is why I do this, because this could have been such a different experience for her. She could have been traumatized by the fact that she thought she was going into her labor, getting an epidural, and she ended up going so fast and she did not get her epidural. And that can traumatize you for sure. So I'm so glad that I was able to help you be prepared for your unexpected natural delivery. And if you want to have an even better birth, just like this mama, head on over to mommylabornurse.com/courses to learn more about our 3 online on-demand birth classes.
Well, let's switch gears for just a second here, and let's talk about this next question. This is a popular one that I get all the time of people asking me. So I get this one. People ask, how do I turn my breech baby? I think that is the question of the day sometimes.
Let's ask, does my breech baby want to turn?
Yeah.
And how does my breech baby want to turn?
Yeah.
How can we make room for the baby to turn if it's safe for the baby to turn? Now, people say, well, if the baby doesn't turn, it must be cord around the neck. That's rarely the case.
Yeah.
Sometimes, and about a third of children have a cord somewhere around their neck or their shoulder.
Right.
So it's rarely dangerous. So what we want to do is not force the baby, but create the space for the baby to turn themselves. Mm-hmm. The baby's an active participant. It's not what we do. It's not what a provider does to the baby. Mm-hmm. Although that is an option that providers will turn the baby. So is there a tight
muscle? But that doesn't, I don't mean to interrupt you, but doesn't work very often, very well, that, you know, when they do those versions.
It's called external cephalic version. So outside the external means outside the abdomen.
Right.
Cephalic means the baby's head, and version means to change.
Right.
So you're externally turning the baby head down. If there's tight muscles or ligaments around the uterus, leading either past the uterus or to the uterus. Think of it as a tight rubber band. And if we were pushing the baby's head into a tight rubber band and let go, the baby's head would bounce back.
Boink. Yeah.
But what if the restoration of the body by relaxing those muscles out of tension or toning them to make a slope for the baby to slip down into the pelvis in a position that the baby can tuck their chin? Now we have the body and the baby working together as partners. That's what we want to do. We want alignment of the pelvis. We want to release any ligament or muscle that's in a spasm, which means it's like a tight rubber band. It may or may not hurt the pregnant person. It might be spasm for 20 years. It doesn't hurt. Or it could be a hurt. It could be a pulled muscle, but it's more likely not to hurt them. If they're doing core exercises, so they have such a tight abdomen for a first baby, we have a technique again from Carol Phillips called abdominal release. We have one for the back called standing sacral release that comes again from Carol Phillips. So these techniques make room in the connective tissue, and muscles and ligaments have connective tissue. So we're making the room, and then gravity brings the head of the baby down, because the head, by the time the baby's about 30 weeks, 32 weeks gestation, the head is heavy enough, even 26 weeks. But, you know, I tell parents by 30 weeks, we expect baby to be head down. We put out free information on spinningbabies.com for what parents can do. They can go and look it up. And if they do those things, they have a good chance the baby could go head down. Not everybody's baby will be head down, because not every baby is breached because of a muscle imbalance or ligament tension. Sometimes it's the shape of the uterus. And it tends to run families a little bit that they're breached babies.
That makes sense. Yeah.
But I think that 70-80% of breached babies would go head down if we figure out the right body balancing for that person. Now, external cephalic version is 50% successful. If any
I feel like it's even less than that most of the time.
Because people don't understand the physiology. So we have experts, and we have like Nicole Morales, Adrian Caldwell, Carol Phillips, Deborah McLaughlin. There are people who are out there that really know. Now, the Webster maneuver is really great.
Yeah.
And it helps a lot of people. But sometimes it's not addressing, let's say, the respiratory diaphragm.
Right.
Or some muscles in the back. Or what I noticed, I'm not a professional body worker, but I've been able to do some of these things that I've learned from these experts. And I notice when a pregnant person's on the massage table and I'm doing some of the techniques I've learned, I'll say, oh, what's going on with your left ankle? I had a break in it. I had a sprain. My left ankle's had history of sprains and it's very stiff.
Yeah.
So the body, the legs start to compensate. And there gets to be tension in the right hip because of that left ankle. So the left ankle is connected to the right hip, right hip connected to the left side of the uterus. And the baby has to accommodate that space.
Oh.
So we get more flexibility and movement in the left ankle by helping the connective tissue, the fascia therapy. And then the right hip now can be aligned by the osteopath or the chiropractor. And the baby says, thank you very much.
That's so like, that makes so much sense, but it's so funny that you would move somebody's foot maybe if they had an injury, like an earlier injury, and maybe it would affect your hip and that would maybe affect baby, but that.
And it might be a tight jaw. They might grind their teeth and now the baby, you know, that leads down the neck into the respiratory diaphragm that pulls the pelvic floor.
Yeah.
And the baby says, well, I don't have room for my head, so I'll put my skinny little butt down here.
Yeah,
babies want to be in a good position. This is not a personality disorder.
Right.
This is about space in the body.
Right. So if somebody is asking that question, we'll say, go to your website. You have free resources. I know you guys have, I think it's like $9.99, a cheap ebook or something about specifically about breech stuff too.
Yes.
And I usually refer people to that because I think that's like overall everything, like do all of this stuff, learn everything you need to know. It's right here.
Yeah. I take the free information. I put it into an ebook and I gave it a schedule and it's like a 6-day program to turn your breech baby.
Yeah.
I said, turn your breech baby to make room for your baby to turn.
Right.
And if you've only got like, if some people find out, oh, my baby's breech and they want me to come in for an external cephalic version tomorrow.
Right.
Well, you can get on the website and do a couple of things.
Yeah.
And they can make the external cephalic version easier to do.
Yeah.
And sometimes not even necessary because you go in and the baby's
because you do out. It yourself. Yeah. Hey.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's possible, but it's not everybody. So right. We need a community of providers. So spinningbabies.com under the parent resources has aware practitioners. Mm-hmm. And I also recommend ICPA for chiropractors with special prenatal training and the Webster maneuver.
Very cool. Well, let's talk about posterior babies now for a few minutes.
Posterior babies are right on that spectrum.
Yeah, so I was going to say it's probably this all of the same tips. Like if somebody has a posterior baby.
Many breech babies turn head down into the posterior position first.
Yeah.
And if we continue to do the balancing.
Yeah.
We don't go upside down for a few days anymore.
Yeah.
We don't do the breech tilt anymore. But now we're doing dip the hip. Mm-hmm. That's a technique created mm-hmm. by a childbirth educator named Deb Lawrence in Chicago. But we do it a little more gently than it was originally designed.
Yeah.
And it helps release the muscles on the back of the pelvis. And that helps the posterior baby turn. Their sideline release from Carol Phillips is a queen of all techniques.
Yes.
It's very good for helping a posterior baby turn. Now, a lot of times they don't necessarily turn in pregnancy.
Right.
But everything gets set up so the uterine contractions can turn them. Now, 65% of posterior babies, approximately, turn all by themselves without anything other than labor contractions.
Yeah.
But sometimes those labor contractions take 2 or 3 days. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be nice to do that within one day?
Yes. Yes.
So if
I think everybody will say yes to that.
And so not too tight, not too loose, not too twisty. The principles of spinning babies are balance, gravity, and movement.
Yeah.
We add body balancing first so that the positions we do in gravity are more effective. So the movements we do to open the pelvis are more effective. We start with balance. We lay it all out on our website. I want to reduce pain and labor. I want to reduce suffering. I want to reduce interventions because our bodies are designed to give birth beautifully, but our civilization is not.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Well, cool. The next one is just about, it's a mouthful. It's asyncliticism. And so, yeah. So tell us kind of what that is and how that plays into kind of what we've talked about, you know, thus far, and how to overcome baby who is asynclitic. I have a feeling you're going to be giving, this is like a broken record. You're going to be saying kind of the same thing.
Just so great. I just being here with you, Lisa.
Yeah.
I'm going to again ask our listeners, if they're not driving, to put their hand over their head, like we put our hand on the crown of our head. But now keep your hand there. Don't move your hand.
Okay.
Keep your elbow still. But tip your head so your ear goes by your shoulder.
Like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But leave your hand up. Now, your hand is no longer on top of your head if you do it. If you didn't move your hand. So try
to. It's like kind of over to the side.
Put your head up and now tip your head, but not your hand. And your hand is now over by that parietal eminence. There's a little bump on the side. Your hand, I can see you, is not in the right place.
Oh. Like right there.
But, yeah. Now you see, now push up into your head.
Yeah.
But think that the pelvis is not letting that wide part of your head, because now your head is wider side to side.
Yeah.
And you feel that little edge of your head that's
right
now
here.
On your hand. There's sort of like a little edge there.
Yeah.
To get into the pelvis, the baby wants to tip their head to dip that edge into the top of the pelvis.
Yeah.
And then they want to rock their head straight to get through the middle of the pelvis.
Uh-huh.
So asyncliticism in the top part of the pelvis is normal. That's not oblique. That's not like the baby laying in a diagonal. It's only the head.
Yeah.
So they do that to dip their head past the bones to get into the pelvis. But down in the pelvis, they need to straighten their head out. Mm-hmm. And if they can't straighten their head out, it's usually because the muscles of the pelvic floor don't let them. Mm-hmm. It could be that the bones are crooked enough not to let them.
Mm-hmm.
The bones and the pelvic floor muscles work together. So it's like a hammock. So if your hammock's crooked, look at your posts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look to the posts. So, you know, we add balance and then the baby says, thank you very much. And either straightens their head Or if the head is so low in the pelvis, they can't straighten it out, by softening those muscles around the baby's head, it might be that the strong pushing and the right birth positions can get the head through the pelvis instead of a cesarean. We teach this to providers in our spinning babies workshops. Mm-hmm. And we teach some birth positions to parents in our spinning babies parent classes done by our certified parent educators who can be found on our website. All these things, breech, posterior, asyncliticism, for most of those babies are caused by something that's too tight, something that's too loose, something that's too twisty. Mm-hmm. How there's simple things parents can do right then and there, whether it's to prevent these things from ever happening in labor, mm-hmm. or if they do happen in labor, what can we do about it in the next 15 minutes to 2 hours? Mm-hmm. Let's go through these things. We teach the doula, we teach the midwife, we teach the nurse, and now doctors are getting involved. The nurses are carrying spinning babies around the world because they can help parents in 15 to 90 minutes to avoid that cesarean.
Yeah.
In many cases, not every case, you know.
Of course, yeah.
They have to have a lot more understanding than birth positions, but we now, in your first six questions, have addressed body balancing.
Yeah.
That's where we start. Our three principles are balance, gravity, movement. We always start with balance. Some people are already well enough balanced, you know, most of us are. We don't have to be perfect.
Yeah. All right, Gail. So that is it for this little session. I know we originally wanted to do all of this stuff in one session, but we're going to have you on again of the Mommy Labor Nurse podcast because you are such a wealth of information and we could just talk all day about some of this stuff. So that closes this little section. Can you just remind listeners where they can find you on your website, on social media, you know, anything that you're working on, all of that good stuff.
Thank you, Liesl. Yes.
Yeah.
I hope your listeners come visit us at spinningbabies.com. website.
Yeah.
We have a Spinning Babies Facebook and we have an Instagram. At the spinningbabies.com website, they can find certified parent educators and aware practitioners under the parent menu navigation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for people in Australia or people who want to take a trip to Australia this October 2020, we're having the Spinning Babies 2020 World Confluence, a mix of earth and body work.
Ooh.
We have spinning babies workshops for providers. We have lots of opportunities for parents. We have day on informed consent with experts mm-hmm. in Australia. We have the spinning babies paradigm and we have body work. And then for those people who've taken a spinning babies workshop, maybe a childbirth educator's taken a spinning babies workshop now, then they can be eligible to take the spinning babies certified parent educator training.
Cool.
We already have parent educators in many countries, in mm-hmm. Europe, in Australia, in the US, and Canada, and we're going to have some more. We're really interested in getting providers aware of spinning babies. So if parents listening to this are interested, please invite you to tell your midwife and your doctors and your nurses about spinning babies. It's surprising how many nurses and midwives go online to spinningbabies.com during a childbirth to look things up. How do I help with this posterior baby? What should we do about this asyncliticism?
Yeah, we absolutely, we have like handouts that we've printed out for people. It wasn't even me after I came to the workshop that I just did, but it was another coworker that I work with who had been to the workshop and she got those resources. We have them on the floor that we're just able to, you know, we look at the three sisters and then the inversions and the...
You mentioned it would be nice if every hospital had a poster.
Well, we need posters everywhere. I know.
We have posters for the hospitals.
Okay, I'm going to get some.
Yeah, they're right on the spinning baby shop.
I'm going to get some for my hospital. I'm totally serious.
Fantastic. And the hospitals also want the quick reference, the spinning baby's quick reference, which takes all these concepts that we teach in the workshop, spells them out in a way that a nurse or midwife would understand them, or a very dedicated parent.
Yeah. You
know, it's birth nerd work, but it's...
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's so key that you mentioned that, hey, this is obviously most people listening to this podcast are moms or, you know, going to be moms. They're not some birth workers, I'm sure, but it's like, tell your midwives about this or, you know, tell your OBs about this. Like, it's almost more important that those people listen and learn about spinning babies.
So they understand what you're doing. When you're doing sideline release or you're getting upside down at 7 centimeters because you want your baby to come out, they need to know and make sure that it's a safe thing for the parents to do, you know, make sure they don't have hypertension or some medical reason not to go upside down. And it's amazing to work with physiology. It's new information. Don't expect the doctors or midwives or nurses to know about this. The parents are empowered for their own physiology to take this forward, to have a wonderful birth.
Well, that's a great way to end it. Gail, thank you so much for joining me. And I can't wait to have you on for part two.
Oh, I look forward to that.
Already feeling a little more confident about pregnancy, birth, and newborn life? Don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you can continue to erase the unknowns and never miss an episode. And if you're looking for even more, Instagram is definitely where I hang out the most. Come join our community of more than 500,000 moms for birth education, tips, and solidarity. You can find me at mommy.labornurse. Check out today's show notes and a searchable library of every Mommy Labor Nurse podcast episode at mommylabornurse.com/podcast. And while you're there, be sure to head to the blog to learn about our online birth classes too. See you next week. And remember, you can have an even better birth, no matter how you deliver.